T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
I really like where he's at. Again, for me, I love production. I love numbers. I love all the fantasy stuff. But, you know, he's somebody, by the way, that won our sweep the sheds for this week. And I think for him, it speaks volumes too. He was hurting pretty good, at a point where we felt like he gutted through it. You know, in this game, it's a physical game, and whether it's mentally, physically, exhaustion, there's times where you get tired, and we just appreciate the little things, and that was a little thing in this past game on a short week, and he's done a lot of great things, and I'm proud of him for it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy talking about Leonard Floyd and, praising Leonard Floyd, as you heard from Chuck Pagano as well yesterday, for fighting through a rib injury and making it onto the field and being able to play.
Yeah, they got a lot of play yesterday. I think we learned Leonard Floyd was playing a little bit injured and impaired, and maybe he did not have a great game against the Lions, and he got the Sweep the Sheds award anyway. Does the guy who wins Sweep the Sheds have to clean up after Club Dub? Is that what the deal is?
It's from the All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby team, right? Yeah. So it's, I don't think we use the sheds here, but Sweep the Sheds. I mean, they read that book, so I guess they're obsessed with the All Blacks. And if you could get to a point where you could dominate like they did, then that would be phenomenal, but not at that point.
So the challenge is for Floyd and the defense. The Cowboys' offense can beat you in a lot of different ways. Now, they're coming in not having scored a lot of points the last 2 weeks against the Bills and the Patriots, two pretty good defenses. Would you say the Bears' defense is better than the Bills and the Patriots' defenses? Would you say they're comparable?
Well, New Orleans held them to what? I think there were three teams that have held them below 17.
Done a nice job, yeah.
So obviously New England held them to 9, New Orleans held them to 10, and I believe the Bills held them to 15. So I think the Bears are comparable to those teams, I in terms of their defense, but New England complements their defense as a team. You know, it seems like Buffalo tries to complement their defense. That's a defensive-driven team, and they use their offensive game plan to complement it. Certainly, New Orleans has a better offensive plan than the other two teams, but they don't play complementary defense. The defense complements the offense, in my opinion, about New Orleans. That's a more well-rounded
certainly
team.
Certainly is.
But the other two teams have been winning with defense, and we've talked about it before. You know, Tom Brady not having a great year.
Right.
Tom Brady.
So what you're saying?
Father Time hitting.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that the game plan of the offense should complement the defense if you want to win this game.
And it has, and they have examples of that. See, that's what I was getting at, because when you look at those two games specifically, the defenses are great, but you have to have a component on your offense that allows your defense to be rested, to be ready, and not be worn down.
Right.
And the Patriots and the Bills were both responsible running the football and in terms of making that a point of emphasis. Now, can the Bears do what they did against the Lions, against the Cowboys? I don't know that they have that kind of discipline. That's the challenge for Matt Nagy. That's the challenge for this offensive line. This isn't the Lions. This is a pretty good defensive front that they're going to be facing in the Cowboys.
I don't know the numbers, but don't the Bears lead the league in 3 and outs? If they don't, they've got to be right there, because they've been god-awful with 3 and outs, David. So that, if offensively, I would try to avoid that. Mm-hmm. I would try to avoid putting my defense on the field all the time and going 3 and out all the time. And I know they're trying to avoid that, but if Mitch is right – if Matt Nagy has figured out that Mitch's pleas for please let me do what I'm good at, if that's worked, then maybe the Bears have a significantly better chance in this game. And, you know, frankly, they're two games behind the Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings are on the schedule. It's up there, but the Vikings were the best game the Bears have played this season.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Bears should be closer to full strength than they were even in that game. If Akeem Hicks, they did not have Akeem Hicks in that game, if you remember. So that was the first game that he was out, and they played unbelievable defense in that game. So I don't know. I don't know what the conclusion is, David, other than...
The conclusion is you have a chance, and the conclusion is that you feel like, it's a small chance, but the conclusion is the context, if you're sitting in that locker room, if you are at Hallis Hall in any capacity, you're saying that you watched that game last night, and had the Vikings won, it would have been a deflating feeling this morning. Instead, it's the opposite. Instead, you are posing these scenarios, and we talked yesterday about games that you don't play having an effect on teams as they watch.
Right.
That's what the effect of last night was if you're a Chicago Bear. You're watching that game, and you're seeing the Seahawks beat the Vikings, a team in front of you, and had they won, they would have had 9 victories.
But I would argue that was a pretty good game, and the Vikings made a game of it, came back. They were down bad. They were down, 34-17 or something?
Oh, they did.
And they came back. And they did a hell of a job coming back in that game.
They did.
I think that – Dallas, I just want to compare the two things. Dallas gets a bigger lift over Philadelphia losing to Miami than the Bears get from Minnesota losing at Seattle. See what I'm saying? So, it doesn't matter. If you get a lift, you get a lift. But I'm just saying, I think I came out of that watching that game thinking, man, the Vikings are pretty damn good.
I agree. And they played well without Thielen, and they did a lot of things that reminded you why they are where they are and they had the season that they've had. But the bar was lower for the Cowboys. I mean, they don't have to be as good to get into the playoffs. They only have to win that division. So the sense of desperation is greater for the Bears. I think when you look at Thursday night, that could be a factor as well. The Bears have much more to lose with a loss than the Cowboys do. The Cowboys could lose theoretically and still make the playoffs at 8-8. If the Bears are 9-7, they've got no shot. If they're 10-6, they still may be on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
But they are in playoff mode. They have to approach it as an elimination game.
And I'd be on board with you if I felt they were over 500. So if they win this game, then maybe I can get on board. But it's going to be hard to get on board with a 6-6 team when mediocrity has been their calling card all year long.
I don't disagree, and I totally get your skepticism, and I think that's probably probably the right way to look at it. But the Cowboys are no less – they have given you no less reason to be skeptical because the last two games coming in, they're not playing at a high level.
Yes, they have a huge advantage, which is they're not in third place in their division. Even though they have the same record as the Bears, they are in first place by a game in their division. Now – I don't know what lift that gives you, but I would imagine, David, that the Dallas Cowboys are a playoff team because they play in what's turned out to be the worst division in football.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bears have played that division, and it is incumbent upon them to be able to get a split in that division. And that's not asking a ton, but it might be asking too much of them, given the fact that Dallas can score.
And the Bears have struggled scoring. We all know that. It's well documented.
They went out to L.A. and they scored 7 points. And I hear people saying, well, Mitch put together 3 games in a row. What are you talking about? One of those games was the Rams where they scored a touchdown.
I don't hear him saying, many people saying he's played 3 games in a row. I mean, he got benched in the Rams game. So
exactly.
I mean, there have been 2 games that he has, you know, had some marginal improvement, but I don't hear people saying he's put together 3 games in a row because that's just not true. As far as the Cowboys go, I mean, they're reeling as close to the definition of a reeling team.
Yes.
That the Cowboys come in and they fit it. They fit that description there's disarray in from ownership. There's a vote of no confidence for the coach. You have an injured offensive line. There are reasons to look at the Cowboys and think that you're playing them at the right time. This game looks much more winnable than it did a month ago. Because if you're the Bears, you have very little reason to believe in your offense, but you're at least welcoming a team to town on a Thursday night that is much more compromised than it was before they were in the midst of their own two-game losing streak. So a little shakier than you thought.
I had a friend of mine send me a story yesterday. This is a story from The Onion. So this is how bad the Dallas Cowboys are. They've made The Onion. This is the sports news. Dallas Cowboys release Jerry Jones, Irving, Texas, in an attempt to cut the franchise's losses and, quote, move forward in a positive direction. The Dallas Cowboys severed ties with controversial owner Jerry Jones Monday, ending their tumultuous 20-year relationship. According to sources within the Dallas organization, the decision to release Jones was influenced by lack of any playoff victories in more than 12 years, the owner's distracting sideline antics, and his selfish me-first attitude, which many said is having a cancerous effect on the clubhouse. You know things aren't going well when you are the correct amusement of The Onion.
You got to think Jason Garrett got a chuckle out of that.
Oh, my God. Classic. Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767. I know some people want to talk some baseball. We'll get into that, too. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Yeah, I think it's all sort of one answer there. The way we envision things as we sit here today is that having multiple quality players at premium positions is a good thing. I spoke to James this morning so that he would hear directly from me what the plan is. And you're exactly right in that Yasmani provides us with some flexibility. While he certainly is a tremendous asset behind the plate, and therefore I expect him to spend a lot of his time there, he does provide us with some flexibility to have that bat in the lineup at DH and at first base. Obviously, James, in certain matchups, can DH as well.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to The Score. That is the voice of Rick Hahn, and that was him after the Grandal signing, explaining James McCann's role. And then yesterday, James McCann ends up signing a one-year, $5.4 million deal. And we've had some texters saying, did he leave money on the table? Could he have not been able
James
to
McCann?
Sign? Well, could he have signed a three-year deal somewhere else?
Yeah, well, I think that when you look at
if he became a free agent, if he wanted to force their hand, would
yeah,
they have sent
I
them?
Think that he understands that this is a good situation for him. You know, I think when you look at last season, he came out of the first half and was one of the bigger surprises in the American
sure.
League. Made the All-Star team, really developed a rhythm and a nice routine with Lucas Giolito. That remains
great.
Intact. Now, are you paying $5.4 million for Giolito's personal catcher? That might be money well spent.
Sure, it would.
And if that's his role and he DHs every now and then and Grandal plays first every now and then, that's a nice combination. You have $23 million tied up at the catcher position, but that's an important position. And the White Sox have the money to spend, so why not? I think that when you look at 5.4 for James McCann, that makes a lot more sense to me than we just talked about last week, paying $6 million for Yolmer.
They need pitching.
And yes, they do.
They don't need one pitcher. They need a couple of pitchers.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how they go about doing that. We were talking this morning. You were telling me about Cole Hamels going on NBC Sports Chicago for a White Sox podcast.
It drops later this morning. Yeah, he talked to Chuck Garfine for a while apparently, and
wow,
Cole Hamels likes what the Sox are doing. Again, I'm paraphrasing because it's not out there yet. It's going to be posted, I think, shortly. it's interesting because if he is on their radar, who isn't? Or if he is on the radar, who else? Because Cole Hamels can't be the guy that you sign and convince Sox fans that he's your top-of-the-rotation starter that you're going out to get. You want Zach Wheeler. You want to be in the Garrett Cole conversation. You want to be in the Mad Bum conversations, right?
No, I want Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
I think they can get him, and I think that would be very nice to see. And then, if they came out of this thing with Zach Wheeler and with Cole Hamels, that's a pretty good off season for them, right?
That would give you some stability in the rotation that you seek, and that you probably
still wonder about right field.
You do need a right fielder, okay? But let's play that out, because this is what we can do in December, because it's fun to talk baseball and possibility with the White Sox. If you get Wheeler and you get Hamels,
right,
and you have Giolito,
yes,
and you have Cease,
yes,
and you have Kopech.
You have Ronaldo Lopez.
Lopez.
You have
Rodon coming back in July.
Yes.
You've got, I'm running out of fingers here.
Yeah, I got about eight pitchers.
I've got like seven, eight guys.
Yep.
Don't even mention your guy Dane Dunning.
No. You haven't mentioned Dane Dunning at all. You refuse to mention him. Every time I mention him, you laugh at me.
No, I don't.
Look at you. The human mockery that goes on here.
I'm not mocking you. I know you like him.
I do like him. Yeah. You know what? Here's my feeling. As a Sox fan who grew up watching Mark Burley, I was just a young kid. You watch a guy like Burley, and it goes back to obviously Maddox is the greatest of all time with this, but not everyone has to throw through a wall.
Right.
Not everyone has to be, you know, sometimes you need pitchers, okay, Professor? Not just a guy that can throw the ball through, Kopech can throw 110 miles an hour or something, right? It'll be interesting to see how they all line up, but I like guys that can pitch, period, end of story.
Well, yeah, I think that it's harder to find those guys or have those guys develop. You know, there aren't many guys like Kyle Hendricks, for instance, of the Cubs getting chances. There aren't guys who are finesse-type pitchers that were, you know, being rewarded for that approach, because
right,
everything is about velocity these days.
And right. Give me a mix.
The high fastball. Yeah, give you a mix.
Yeah.
And you would
give me
be getting a mix.
Of players.
If they get the pitchers that we just described, that's a formidable team. And that's why you have...
How much is Cole Hamels going for these days? Does he say it on the podcast?
I don't know. I have not... Just for the record, I have not heard the podcast. I just know that it's dropping because it was announced. I was there last night, and I know they were excited about talking to Cole Hamels, who seemed to be excited to be talking about the White Sox.
I would have no problem with Cole Hamels signing here. I mean, he's a veteran. He's a winner. He's still serviceable. But, you know, you guys are kind of talking about velocity versus pitching in a traditional sense. One of the problems the Cubs rotation had last year was lack of guys that threw hard, lack of strikeouts, and that ended up catching up with them. The game has sort of turned a little bit where you need more guys that are swing and miss guys other than Mark Burley types.
You need to miss some bats.
Yes.
Right.
But don't you think that the young White Sox pitchers have that strikeout capability?
Cease.
Yes.
You know, Giolito put up some huge
absolutely.
Strikeout numbers.
He had one of the best swing and miss rates in baseball.
That's what he does, right? And
Cease as well has got that priority. But, you know, it's just because you have some doesn't mean you don't need to add others. And like I said, I'd be fine with Cole Hamels as a back end of the rotation option. No question
right.
about it. But you still do need those velo guys.
You do.
But I'm saying I think they have that. And
add Zach Wheeler.
And I think, well, there you go. But I'm saying if Dane Dunning's not that is what I'm saying. And therefore, David laughs every time his name comes up.
I don't laugh.
But there are...
You're overstating my
laughter.
Give me
a blend. Give me a blend of those guys.
You need a blend.
But you're right, Kevin. You do need, definitely need velocity guys. I'm just operating under the assumption, again, making an ass out of you and me, never assume, that they have younger guys that can do that, and that Kopech is going to be able to come back, and he's had enough time now. He's far enough removed from that surgery that we should be able to see him and see the best of him.
Looking forward to talking to John Heyman at 7:40. He can
bring
us up to date on some of the free agent signings and talk. Because Anthony Rendon, did you see that? Texas Rangers now have emerged as the front runner for him.
Right.
That's kind of the surprise team. They've always been able to spend a lot of money, but that would be a guy changing leagues. He's from Houston. Maybe going back to the state of Texas is something that he favors, but he's another guy that if you're the White Sox, you want to be in that conversation. I don't know how realistic it is, but there may not be enough money to spend for that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. I think the McCann signing, I think there's a lot of positives. You know, I didn't like that Yomer had to leave because I thought there was some value there, but I get it. You know, you don't want to pay guys that are in roles that are kind of support. You don't want to pay a guy. It's really why Addison Russell was cut. You know, you don't want to go into arbitration with a guy that's going to get paid more than you think he's worth.
So wait, now the White Sox are in the market for a veteran defensive replacement who might be cheap, looking for work.
No.
Okay.
Let's not even.
I'm just asking.
You know, here's the thing: when you sign a guy, you're putting your stamp of approval on him, and I just don't know that's the kind of reach you want to make.
As a player and as a human being,
that's what
you want to bring into the organization. Yeah.
I think he needs to get out of Chicago, too.
Yeah,
change of scenery would benefit Addison Russell.
The idea of him going to the south side, would he ever actually leave the north side? Because I think he's got a nice setup. He probably wants to stick around, and he would just go play ball there. But that would be about it. Exactly.
I still am interested in Nick Castellanos and where he would end up. The White Sox still have a gaping hole in right field.
Very much so.
But I mean,
wouldn't they have
a gaping hole if they had Aloy and, you know, if those are your corner outfielders? Isn't that a little worrisome?
That's why you just hit a bunch of dingers and you score 10 runs a game.
Right.
And you don't have to worry
about
your defense.
I'm all for that.
Very good. Very good.
Bring Nick in.
Yeah. Young St. Nick delivers all summer long, right?
Yeah.
Scoreboard update.
And from the Chicago Wolves Update Studio, I'm Kevin Zipak. If your youth hockey team wants to play in front of thousands at Allstate Arena, it's possible with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn more. We are winners. We are the Wolves. Starting on the West Coast last night, the Bulls snapped their 3-game losing streak in Sacramento. Bulls beat the Kings 113-106. 28 points for Zach LaVine led Chicago. Lauri Markkanen had 20 points, 7 rebounds.
We're thankful for the win. I mentioned we practiced hard, after the Portland game on Sunday, and then we got our work in today, and I thought our guys responded and played well.
Bulls have the Memphis Grizzlies tomorrow night at the United Center. College basketball last night, Miami defeated Illinois 81-79. UIC beat San Diego 89-83. To hockey, a rough night for the Blackhawks. They were shut out 4-0 by the St. Louis Blues. And off the ice, assistant coach Mark Crawford, he has stepped away from the team as an investigation is taking place into allegations of abuse against the 58-year-old. Major League Baseball, as the guys were just talking about, the White Sox re-upped with James McCann for 1 year. The Cubs did not tender a contract to Addison Russell. He's now a free agent. And the Reds signed Mike Moustakas to a 4-year, $64 million deal. Finally, up at Halas Hall, the Bears will practice once again today as they continue to prepare for the Dallas Cowboys coming up Thursday at Soldier Field. Ben Broniker, Taylor Gabriel, Bobby Massey, Danny Trevathan, all the usual suspects on the injury report sat out of practice. But somewhat surprisingly, corner Prince Amukamara sat out with a hamstring issue. One more day of practice for the Bears today, 11:30. Matt Nagy speaks afterwards. And last night on Monday Night Football, the Seahawks beat the Vikings 37-30. I'm Kevin Zipak, and you are listening to Chicago's number one ranked sports station, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. You're home for Bears Mondays. This is 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
113-106, and the Kings will dribble it out. The ball game is over. Bulls win! Bulls win! Bulls win the final here at Sacramento. 113-106 Bulls.
We made the plays we had to make. I think there's still some learning moments in there, Darnell, but we fought back from being down, and then we got a lead, and then we lost it, and then we fought back again, and I'm happy that we were able to win.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. That was a victory for the Bulls last night. You heard Jim Boylan there, and we are delighted to welcome in Brian Scalabrine. He is radio.com sports NBA insider. Insider calls brought to you by Quip. Go to getquip.com/2019 and get your first refill pack for free. And Brian joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Morning, Brian.
I'm doing well. You know, I'm I'm kind of snowed in up in Boston, but I'm happy, man. It's like last night, just chilled, watched NBA games, and it's good times. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and I mean, that storm's awful. It's hit New York and shut down New York, and the whole East Coast has been subjected to this thing, and be safe. I mean, it sounds pretty scary.
Yeah, once I get off this call, I got to go out there and shovel the driveway.
We'll take up a lot of your time.
Yeah, the kids woke up and they're like, "We got school." I'm like, "Well, you guys got a 2-hour delay. That's the good news. The bad news is you guys got to come outside and help me plow this driveway." So
get to work.
Both smiles turned to frowns pretty quickly.
Well, Brian, here in Chicago, the Bulls are not exactly off to the start they envisioned. Last night they get a victory out in Sacramento. They're 1-2 on the West Coast swing. Been disappointing year, no question about it. One of the biggest mysteries surrounds Lauri Markkanen. Last night was the first time this season that he and Zach LaVine both scored 20 or more points.
Uh-huh.
When you watch the Bulls, does his lack of productivity baffle you the most, or what is it if it's not that?
And listen, I could be completely wrong by this, but the way I look at basketball is you want to win in the NBA nowadays, especially with the lack of physical contact. One, you have to have a guy that you go to down the stretch. Now, that could be Zach LaVine, but a guy you can really count on to get you buckets in the last 4 minutes if you have a close game. The problem when I watch the Bulls, and in particular Lauri Markkanen, is the ball doesn't move as freely as it should. Now, I get it. They're low turnover, which is important. They take care of the basketball, and defensively they're active with their hands, and that's part of it. I think they lead the league in turnover differential, but the issue is, every time the ball passes, there's like a quarter second delay. Like, I'm going to get mine. Well, I can't. Now I move it. When the ball moves freely, Lauri Markkanen will be good because that's the type of player he is. Like, dude, if you're moving the ball around the perimeter and he gets a wide open shot and now he knocks it down, somewhere down the road, his man's going to start creeping towards him and now the lane's going to open up. It's the NBA that we play in now. And quick decision makers make the difference. So, when the Bulls start moving the ball freely and they start sharing, you know, I think they're, 22nd, 23rd in assist. Once they start creeping that number up, Markkanen will play better, and I think they will play better because they do a lot of good things. The only thing that really stands out to me is everyone's looking to get theirs when they get the ball, and that's not conducive to being successful in the league the way the league is called, especially in the regular season and especially the first 44 minutes of the game.
Well, you know what's confusing is this is a team that has been in games but doesn't know how to close them. It's almost as if they don't, they don't know who their go-to guy is, and Zach LaVine is convinced it's him, and that doesn't always work. How does a team learn how to close? That seems to be their biggest problem. And even last night, they were up 19 at one point, and it ended up, you know, at the end of the game, they're kind of clutching for a win again.
Yeah, I mean, I think for them, it will be like, and this is like, big time players close, big time, like top tens. Even there's some special players out there, like a Lou Williams type of guy to close. There are some players that can close. Like Zach LaVine is not at that point now where every night, if you give him the ball, you know you're going to get good shots or from his shot or somebody else's shot. So they got to do it a little bit differently. Like I cover the Boston Celtics, I go to all their games. Over the course of time, Brad Stevens has changed. He's in the past gone with a play, a ball movement, you know, a dribble handoff to a kick ahead to a look inside to a look weak side. Like they've done things as a team. But when he had Kyrie or now he has Kemba and Jason Tatum, like now he's gone to more, let's give the ball to these guys and we think that we can get a good shot. It's not the way that a lot of people want to play, but for the Bulls, and I not sure that they're in that area yet. They got to play with ball movement down the stretch. They got to move the ball side to side and try to get some late action down the stretch, not just give the ball to one guy, have a bunch of people standing around, and all of a sudden see if you can win. No, come off the screen with Wendell Carter. Get the ball to the second side. Have Kobe White try to get to the lane. Now move it from there. Like that's the biggest thing for them down the stretch and during the game. I just don't think they move it side to side fast enough.
Brian, reading body language can be dangerous, but there have been a couple snippets where you watch Jim Boylan interact with his players, and it seems as if they might be tuning him out a little bit, and they might be not all on the same page at all times. And you wonder about the effect over time of a rah-rah coach on a young team. Today is the anniversary of Jim Boylan taking over as the head coach of the Bulls. And I just wonder, from the outside looking in, I know that he gets a lot of criticism and scrutiny here in Chicago. But outside the city, what is the perception of Jim Boylan and the job he's doing with the Bulls?
Yeah, so it's I know he's a good coach. No, there's no doubt about that. He knows how to coach. He knows basketball. I've watched him operate. He knows exactly how to hold a lead typically, and what a team's strengths are and taking away and what to emphasize with his team. I know that. The issue is, going back to what you said just 1 year ago, the idea that, if you remember early on, he was doing the wholesale subs. He was like, in a way, it's like calling his team out, calling out your starters, saying like, these guys didn't bring it today, so let's put them on the bench. And that's, NBA players can handle that once in a while. NBA players could say, coach is right, we got to be better today. But if it's always the player's fault, if after the game, if he doesn't say things like, hey, that's on me, I got to do a better job of getting my guys ready, we can't come out, 14-2 starting the game. When they came out and did this, my team was not prepared. And so there has to be some level of accountability from him. Now, I'm not saying he's not doing that, but the players have to feel that. They have to know that he's taking responsibility just as much as they are. Because when you heard earlier in the year that he benched Zach LaVine, and Zach was like, how is that all on me? How is our bad start just fall on me? And then he says, well, hey, you blew three defensive assignments during that time. You want to go down that road, by all means do it. But that's a dangerous road to go down when a player has $80 million coming to him in a guaranteed contract. And there are plenty of other suitors out there for Zach LaVine to say, yeah, no problem. You don't want me? You don't want to play me? Someone else will take me on. Because a lot of other coaches or organizations will think to themselves, of course, we'll take his talent because our culture, and we'll get him to do what we want him to do. We would not call him out the way that they do. So it's a dangerous road to go on as a head coach, but you do have to hold your team accountable. I just think that balance is a very tricky one.
Brian, I don't know if this is an aberration, and I don't know how you feel about plus minus, but yesterday the Bulls reserves, every one of them, a double digit plus and plus minus, and all five starters a minus.
So you're saying there's going to be a change in? Yeah, I mean, that happens
35-24 with the reserves over, bench points, and the reserves are playing better than the starters, I guess, if you like plus minus.
They're also going against reserves.
Yeah, exactly.
Also,
right.
You know what I mean? So that you have to factor that in. Listen, starting lineup changes could happen. I always find, and no fault to the media, it does seem to make a lot of sense, right? Like, hey, we're not getting off the good starts. We need to switch things up. But the basketball is a funny sport. It is so easy to turn something around. It could be an effort play. It could be trying to get out and running early versus slowing the pace down. So, yeah, when the backups come in and they play free, or if the backups are down by 15 and they build themselves back in, and then the starters come back and they lose the lead again, it's always different. Like, playing up 20 is different than playing down 20. Like, there's all those dynamics into it. But if you're consistently getting off to a bad start, then either A, you make a change, which I'm not a big proponent of. I think it's more B, we emphasize getting off to a good start. We emphasize what are the two things we need to do in this first quarter to get off to a good start. We're not rebounding the ball. We're not moving the ball. We're not attacking the paint. Whatever they are, NBA players are more than capable of doing it, and their roster is a good roster. They're more than capable of going out there and doing it. It's just what coaches decide to emphasize during those first 12 minutes of, or even let's cut it even down further, the first 6 minutes of the game. There is an issue. What is the issue? Emphasize that. And listen, other issues will pop up over the course of 82 games. But whatever Coach Boylan has to decide, this is the way for us to take our game to the new level or to get off to a good start, those are the things that have to be done. Now, going back to the Zach LaVine benching, if it was defensively, we have to have a presence on the ball. We have to impact the ball. We can't just be soft defensively in the first quarter. And if Zach LaVine didn't do it, then you have to take him out, because you emphasize that. It was clear as day to everybody. The issue comes when you're not emphasizing things, you're not telling players what your expectations are going into that first quarter, or going into a different way to start the half. You guys remember the unbelievable Bulls teams Like Michael Jordan and that 72 win team, his whole thing was, I want to be sitting in the fourth quarter. So we got to come out like gangbusters in the third and push this lead up. And that was their emphasis. And night in and night out, they tried to accomplish that goal.
Okay, good point. So more specifically then, when you look at Coby White, and I think that a quarter way through this season, I've liked the way that they have used him with the second team coming off the bench, because I think that he's a rookie. You incorporate him slowly. He's 19 years old. All those things are still true. At the same time, if you're looking for a spark immediately, how long before you're tempted to start him? And would that make any bit of a difference?
Yeah, so that's interesting. It would go, like, the way that I would look at, this is how I look at all young players, right? Remember, young players have played, they played AAU, but it's not as intense as the NBA. They've gone to college, they've played 30-something games. During that time, just even an NBA 32 minutes is so different than a college, 36 minutes. So when it comes to a young player, the development would more than just like, hey, everyone thinks, just throw him out there and play him a bunch and then he'll get good someday. Sometimes it's about like pacing a guy the right way. So you look at Coby White. When I watch him play, I think he's a hard-playing guy. I'm not sure that he can play 35 minutes a night over the course of 82 or over the course of what we call like 3.75, and that's what the average amount of games are per week for these guys. So maybe his minutes, it makes sense for him to play free with the second unit, go out there, and we want to keep him at 22. And then 2 months in, we want to put him at, 26. So when I would focus on a young player, I would focus on, with my medical, and there's all, sports science, it wouldn't just be like what I decide to do. It would be like, how can we get it so we can build his minutes up by the end of the year, but we don't want him to have a nagging injury. I'll give you an example. In Boston, Gordon Hayward, you guys remember the horrific injury.
Right.
They had this huge game plan for Jason Tatum to be able to develop, but still be able to work out, get in the weight room, get his shots up, work on some of his weaknesses. Gordon Hayward goes down. That's 32 minutes that you now have to fill. Jason Tatum took those minutes. But during that first year, a lot of things had to slip because he was playing so many minutes and his body was not capable of handling the weight, developing him his game, and playing the minutes that he had to play. In the Bulls situation, the way that they used Coby White, they could develop him. They can get him a little bit stronger during the season, which is a lot of times the best thing for him in his career over the course of whatever it's 5, 10, 15 years.
Great stuff, Brian. Thank you a ton.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Anytime, guys.
Good stuff.
That was Radio.com Sports NBA Insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider Calls brought to you by Quip. Go to getquip.com/2019 and get your first refill pack for free. And make sure you check out Brian's show, Scal and Pals. It's on Radio.com and the Radio.com app. A great listen for all NBA fans. Just search Scal wherever you find your podcast.
He's smart.
S-C-A-L.
Can the Bulls hire him?
Oh, he's a
or something in the organization.
Yeah, smart
guy.
No question about it. All right, we're going to bring in another smart guy or a very wise guy. Brad Biggs will join us next. Biggs time coming up here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.